Ini perkara yang kita ingin bincangkan. Saya nak bawakan pakar kita pada pagi ini. Joining us this morning is Professor Dr. Jeffrey William, Economic Professor, Malaysia University of Science and Technology. Prof, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Prof, we know that the combined factors, both regional and also globally, have made the ringgit, you know, to be somewhat weakened to its current level. How long do you expect, you know, this to prolong, and what measures can be taken or have been taken in that sense to reduce the impact and subsequently support the value of ringgit?
Okay, well, good morning. Thanks for having me. The question as to how long this is going to last is really a question of how long we're going to see the developments in the global economy influencing the ringgit. Actually, since the Financial Markets Committee of Bank Negara issued a statement actually last week, wasn't it, last Tuesday, the ringgit has actually stabled, and certainly the decline that we have been seeing over the last few months has, appears to have been stemmed to some extent. And so since last Tuesday, the ringgit has been trading pretty in a pretty stable range of about 4.66 to 4.68 to the dollar over that period. So from that perspective, what we know and understand about the current situation is that it is largely driven by factors outside of the control of Malaysian policymakers. And to that extent, if you ask the question, how long will that last? Well, it will last for as long as the international financial markets are more interested in investments in other countries than they are in investments in Malaysia.
Professor, you have mentioned that the extent of the external economic volatility could expand quite longer. Maybe you can share with us from the external economic volatility, such as the global trade tensions or fluctuations in commodity prices, affected the depreciation of the ringgit?
Well, you have to remember that exchange rates are determined by markets. And certainly in Malaysia, which is rather different to Singapore or Hong Kong, for example, Bank Negara is very clear about the exchange rate policy, which is that the exchange rate is a shock absorber, an automatic stabilizer within, which helps the economy to deal with some of these major international issues of volatility. And to that extent, it has been working really very successfully. And if we look now at what people are concerned about, a depreciation over the last 2 or 3 months, but actually if we were to go back just before the election, in November of last year, the ringgit was trading at 4.75. And after the election was finished and we had a new government settled into place, the ringgit actually appreciated really very significantly, nearly more than 10%. And so what we're seeing now are just normal changes in overall interest rate, in overall exchange rate position. And because Malaysia treats the exchange rate as a market-determined shock absorber, it really isn't something that we should be overly concerned about. There are ups and downs. So if we were to suggest, which is true, of course, that a depreciating exchange rate has an effect on the cost of imports, that's definitely true. But the impact that that will have on consumers and on inflation is really very small. By contrast, a depreciating ringgit does help exporters very much indeed. And so we have to look both at the costs and the benefits. It's a bit of a trade-off. My personal view is very much in line with that of Bank Negara, which is that the markets will determine the exchange rate, and the bank should only intervene when that becomes excessive or when it would affect the underlying fundamentals of the Malaysian economy. And actually, that's not the case at the moment. The underlying fundamentals of the Malaysian economy are very strong. We have inflation has fallen to about 2.8%, and it's going to fall to about 2.5% in the next month or so, and it will continue to fall, in my view, for the rest of the year. The economy is growing and the financial sector is stable. And that's because we allow the exchange rate to fluctuate in the way that it is, and we shouldn't be overly concerned about it.
Prof, we'll get into the export aspect later on. But how has the monetary policy stance of the central bank, especially the Fed, for instance, impacted the depreciation for the ringgit? And what alternative measures could have been taken to mitigate the depreciation. We've been talking about, for instance, central bank, the Bank Negara intervention, and we know, you know, some experts say that this is not sustainable for a longer period. And we've also seen before that Malaysia tried to repatriate some of the funds invested from overseas to support the value of the ringgit. Do you think that this kind of measures, you know, can help boost the value at, for a medium term at least?
Well, what we know is that it has worked for at least the last week, because the Financial Markets Committee made a statement last Tuesday, and as I mentioned just a moment ago, the ringgit has stopped depreciating and it has been stable for the course of a week. And a week is a long time in financial markets, let's be clear about that. In terms of the interest rate intervention, Bank Negara has not been following the Fed. And that's the correct position, because Bank Negara has its own mandate, which is to look at price stability, financial sector stability, and sustainable growth in the Malaysian domestic economy. And as a consequence, interest rate rises here have been very much more conservative. There have only been a few increases from 1.75% to 3% where we are now. And that has really helped the fundamentals of the Malaysian economy. If we compare it to, for example, to Hong Kong, Hong Kong has been following the Fed, and their interest rates have risen by 500 basis points over the course since last March. So over that period, they have increased their interest rates by 5%. And for the whole of 2022, they were in recession, four successive quarters of economic contraction. So what they are looking at doing in terms of their monetary policy is to stabilize their exchange rate at the cost of economic growth. Whereas here in Malaysia, Bank Negara takes a different view, which is to use monetary policy, and particularly the OPR, to deliver sustainable economic growth and allow the exchange rate to fluctuate. And that's a different policy stance, reflecting the different structures of Malaysia's economy compared to Hong Kong, for example. And it has worked very successfully. If Bank Negara had been following the Fed, OPR today would be 6.75%, not 3%. And if the interest rates were at 6.75%, that means your mortgage, your credit card, your car loan, your personal loan, your business loan would be massively higher than where it is now. And that would crush borrowers. It would risk the type of recession that Hong Kong has had and that Singapore is in the first stage of at the moment. The Singapore economy contracted in the first three months of this year. And that would have actually a negative effect on the ringgit, because the fundamentals of the economy would be weakened if Bank Negara had been following the Fed. So it appears to me that Bank Negara has been following exactly the right policy.
All right. As you mentioned, Professor, Bank Negara is on the right track as on the decision for the past few months and over the years. Maybe we could shift a bit on the trade aspect. On one hand, with the ringgit depreciations, exports from Malaysia are now cheaper relative to history and relative to its peer. It also implies that imports are increasingly more expensive, affecting businesses and consumers. Of note, Malaysia's current account balance to gross domestic product GDP ratio deteriorate over time from 15.9% as at and 1999 to 1.0% at first quarter of 2023. This proved that cheap does not mean good, especially in the long run. How do you foresee this will unfold further, with taking into consideration account with the first half for 2023 was expected, the GDP was around 5%. It's a bit lower than target, but with the ringgit of depreciation, are we seeing this, how can we see this unfold further in the future, Professor?
Well, I think that the observations you've just made are very interesting, because they help us to unravel the difference between the long-term trends and the short-term volatility that we're seeing at the moment. So in terms of the short-term volatility, if the exchange rate depreciates, yes, it does have an effect on the prices of imports, but only 10% of consumer, only 10% of imports are consumer goods, actually. And a 5% depreciation in the exchange rate will only add 0.2% to inflation 12 months down the line. So the effect of higher import prices on inflation and on consumers is actually very muted. By contrast, if you look at it the other way around, the benefits to a depreciation for exporters are very much more considerable. And because we have seen a much lower growth in global demand and global activity, particularly we didn't see the push from the China reopening that many people had been expecting, there are headwinds in the global economy, which is affecting Malaysia's trade position. And the depreciation at the moment will help Malaysia's exporters. In the long term, as you mentioned, looking back perhaps to before the lockdown and even further beyond that, the Malaysia's trade position is relative to other countries. And it really isn't a question of the Malaysian economy doing badly. It's much more a question of other economies doing very much better, particularly Indonesia, Vietnam, which are larger economies in terms of their population. And they're also growing very much faster because they're at a different, a little bit earlier stage of economic development. Now, these long-term trends are something that we have to look at, but the policy response to that is structural reform. And structural reform is by its nature not a quick thing. And it's also not an easy thing. There are no quick wins when it comes to structural reforms particularly in terms of trade. And that's something that's very much, I think, on the economic agenda now. And we hope that we will see that the government will focus on that in the coming weeks and months ahead.
Prof, I'll get into the structural reform later, but let's talk about the also another topic that correlates to the current situation. The stock, the Bursa Malaysia performance as of yesterday is still below 1,400 benchmark. One of the measures, you know, announced by the government last month basically was to reduction of the stamp duty rate for the trading of listed shares on Bursa Malaysia from 0.15% to 0.10%. While the stamp duty cap is maintained at RM1,000 for each contract. You know, this change, which take effect in July, will directly lower the cost of transactions, especially for retail investors who are particularly sensitive to the costs. And yet, Prof, here we are looking at the FPM KLCI, which is lower, below than 1,400. You know, what's your take on this?
Well, again, this is a question of the long-term trend and the short-term volatility. If you look at the KLCI, it has been in trend decline since 2018, which is before the lockdown. And it was around 1,800, and now it's, as you say, not quite meeting 1,400. It's actually nearly a 25%. Drop in its value over that period from 2018 to where we are now. And there are three main reasons for this. The first is that the companies listed on the stock market are underperforming, and that is simply a management problem. Some are very well managed and they are doing quite well, but many are not. And that's not good for investors, and particularly not good for foreign investors who have a lot of options for better performing equity investments, or particularly overseas in different markets. The second big reason why we see this trend decline in Bursa since 2018 in particular is because it is actually very difficult for foreign investors to take a meaningful position in Bursa, because the companies are actually quite small and the shares are closely held, often by the founders of the company or by institutional investors here, the government-linked investment corporations, for example. And that means that foreign investors can't really invest a great deal in terms of getting a large number of shares at a meaningful amount of fund placement. And that's a liquidity problem, and that's been a problem, a structural problem that's been there for a long time. And the third issue is that many international investors are now very much concerned about environmental, social, and governance issues. We know very much that ESG issues are very high on the agenda, particularly for international investors. And the fact is that Malaysian listed companies don't have a good reputation in terms of ESG. And that means that many international investors simply can't take the risk of investing in Bursa because they can't guarantee that the ESG rating or the sustainability reports reflect the actual underlying ESG risk. And that's a significant problem for international investors. Now, these things are all structural issues. And actually, the stock market is not a good barometer of the performance of the economy, because whereas Bursa KLCI has been in decline since 2018, actually, for the whole of that period, apart from the lockdown, of course, the economy has been performing really very well. So you can see that there is a mismatch or a disconnect between stock market performance and economic performance.
Okay. Prof, I want to ask about this because a lot of people have been commenting about this. How do you see and especially the reform agenda taking place in Malaysia, especially after 7 months or so under the new government? And do you think that we've seen the impact yet? And are we on the right track? And what more should be done to further accelerate any kind of reform needed to boost economic performance?
Okay, well, I mean, I think the most important thing to understand is that 7 months is a very short period when it comes to the economy, when it comes to structural reform and structural policies. Nonetheless, we are seeing some important changes. We've already seen the start of the subsidy rationalization process. And that, in my view, is happening really very quickly, particularly in terms of utilities subsidies, and where government is now moving on to looking at petrol subsidies. And I think that that process is clearly underway, and that's a very important structural reform, which will help both the fiscal side, the government's balances, but it will also improve market performance, in my view, in the long term.
Professor, talking about rational subsidies, which Malaysia is in a very big process right now, but I've discussed with some of the analysis expert. They're saying that maybe a rational rational subsidies is not quite attractive towards international investors. How do you think about this, Professor, actually?
I think that the high subsidy bill, where it was really highlighted during the lockdown, of course, because it just exploded toward 80 billion, more than 80 billion ringgit. And that really exposed the level and the extent of the subsidies programs. And people really started to focus on that and ask questions about whether that amount of money is sustainable, whether we should be doing it, the market distortions that take place, and whether in particular it was actually helping. And this is, of course, at the core of subsidy rationalization, whether the subsidies are actually helping the targeted group, that is particularly people on low incomes. And what we know about subsidies is that they don't always successfully impact the targeted group in the way that they are designed to do. And they often have a greater benefit to people who, in many respects, don't need to have the subsidies. So that whole process has been thrown into the spotlight. And it's important that happens, because we do need to reform the subsidies. Now, in terms of what the effect that will have on international investors, I think that international investors should look at this in a positive way. I think that they should see that this is a way in which the government is actually stepping back out of the market, stepping back out of the economy. It's freeing up the economy. It's reducing market distortions associated with subsidies. And it's also embarked on a process which will help to save money in terms of the government subsidies bill. And that will have a positive effect on the overall government balances particularly in terms of government deficit and the management of government deficit. And it will help the government to save money that can be reprioritized in terms of spending. And those priorities will be, to a large part, based on the structural reforms that we were just discussing. So I think if you look at it from that perspective, you can view it in a very positive way.
Prof, with the doom and gloom sentiments in that sense by a certain group of people in the community and also from the experts, with the positivity that you mentioned a lot just now, how confident are you that Malaysia is in the right track to do restructural reform and also to recover from all the how to say bleak recovery that we are facing right now?
Well, the two to three years that we had in the lockdown and the immediate period after the lockdown were truly terrible for everybody, not just here in Malaysia, but also globally. But, you know, we have now recovered to post-pandemic levels in terms of GDP, for example. And we are back on a track of more sustainable recovery. It may be lower than we have experienced in the past, but nonetheless, it is likely to be more sustainable. And that's there in the numbers. You know, the economy grew by 8.7% last year. It grew by 5.7% in the first quarter of this year. Inflation is now at 2.8% and is heading down, and that's a good thing. Interest rates in Malaysia are now in their normal range, and they're very much lower than in other countries in the region. And that's accommodating the possibilities of sustainable growth, and that's a very positive thing. There are headwinds, of course, as we've just discussed, in terms of the global environment for the exchange rate and the global environment for trade. But generally speaking, if you look at the numbers, Malaysia is in a better position than many other countries in ASEAN and many other countries in Asia, and certainly is in a very much better position than many countries in Europe, particularly my own country back in the United Kingdom. Malaysia is in a very much better position than we are in the United Kingdom, and a very much better position than, for example, in the United States. So I'm actually very positive. Of course, we are looking forward to understanding what the government's strategies are for structural reform. We're promised to see that next month. We have the Economy Madani launched next month, and that will help to give us some clarity on some of the main issues. I think they've been highlighted, and we get some hints of what they are going to be. I think that there will be a focus on increasing incomes and increasing addressing the cost of living, not by manipulating or controlling prices or subsidies, but by actually raising people's incomes so that they can afford to meet the, you know, the higher price rises that we see. And I think that will be a very important element in the reform process, as well as, of course, the structural subsidy reforms. And then I hope that we will see a more open economy, removing government intervention, freeing up some of the markets. Flexible working arrangements, for example, will be extremely important in helping people in the labor market to improve their income possibilities. And so I think that these are the type of things that we're looking forward to see.
Certainly, my colleague Nina is happy to hear about the suggestion, the flexible working hour.
Yes.
Professor, thank you so much, Professor Jeffrey William, for joining us this morning. Really appreciate your thoughts and comments, and also, help us to understand the whole situation. Thank you so much, Professor.
Thank you.